the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, this week is Fall Prevention Awareness Week. We all know as we age, maintaining our health is very important, from diet to exercise to good medical care. Joining me on the program is Rebecca Rothstein. She's an expert in Pilates. And Rebecca, let's talk about Pilates in its origination, because a lot of people think that Pilates is an exercise for young women. But when Joseph Pilates invented the exercise routine and the machines, it's my understanding it was for rehab for men after World War I. Can you give us a little background on that?
Well, Joseph Pilates had actually been a sickly child, and he'd had all sorts of problems, including asthma. So people tend to think of his system as something that's just about creating flat abs, where in reality, he was doing it as a whole body health system that was initially helping him live a better, fuller life, and with an emphasis on breathing, for instance, as one of the key components in how people could live better lives in general. And then when he was in an internment camp in World War I, he was a German citizen and he was interned in the Isle of Man in Great Britain. He started working with some of the other injured soldiers. And through that, he started really developing the idea of how he could make people feel better and also recuperate, even those who couldn't stand, for instance. So his original population and what he was really designing everything for were men, which is really interesting in contrast to the perception that Pilates has today. Just as you said, that it's for young people, that it's for flexible people, for that it's for women specifically.
Rebecca, when you talk about Pilates, we think of it as a toning, a flexibility. But as you mentioned, it was originally designed for rehab. What are some of the rehabilitation methods, or let's say things that it works and focuses on? I know osteoporosis is one, but what are some of the others? Because as we began this discussion this morning, we talked about Fall Prevention Week and awareness, because that's something that does plague older individuals as they age. You know, they fall, they break hips, and there's problems with arthritis, rotator cuff problems for people that play golf or tennis. There's all kinds of issues. But specifically, what is Pilates designed, or where does it work best in terms of rehabilitating the patient?
I think there's a couple points there to highlight. Well, first of all, Pilates can work towards so many different types of populations. And that's the beauty, is that it can be modified or geared toward whatever is the body that's there in front of you as the practitioner. It can work very well for conditioning. It can work very well for athletic conditioning and performance. But as you mentioned, it also is great for injuries and helping people that are having trouble with one part of their body, and also to give a sense of what we call self-efficacy. So as you probably are aware, you've been injured at some point in your life. And the first experience that you have, in addition to pain, is frustration, right? And along with that, frustration becomes a negative cycle, because you're told, or you experience pain, but you also might be told, oh, you can't do certain things. And the beauty of Pilates is that it gives you a sense of accomplishment and achievement of things that you can be doing. So it changes your psychological perspective as well. So when we talk about specific things, you mentioned, for instance, osteoporosis. There are certain movements within Pilates that have, I wouldn't say a predominance, but the mat work, there is a predominance of a forward bending motion, which should be avoided in many situations for people with osteoporosis because of the risk of fracturing their spine. So like, say you're going to pick something up off the ground, you don't want to be bending your back to do it. But instead, you simply bend at your knees and you bend at the hip. So the hip is where your thigh bone is connected to your pelvis. So there's all sorts of ways that you can modify the movements, and you can still get and reap many benefits from Pilates, but that's something that should be kept in mind. There's other things like osteoarthritis, and just like osteoporosis, where there's a risk of fracture because of a change in the quality of the bone. With osteoarthritis, it's a different situation, but that one where people do experience pain, and the pain is because of a deterioration in the cartilage of the joint. So what do people do? They stop moving because the movement induces pain. But the beauty of Pilates here is that there's an activation of the muscles and a change in the connective tissue and the quality of the connective tissue, which can help you improve your range of motion and not have the same pain experiences. Also, you know, coming back to what you were saying before when we're talking about fall prevention, both osteoporosis and osteoarthritis, they occur very frequently in the over 50 population. And arthritis, people don't think about fall, but interestingly, there's 30% more falls and a 20% greater risk of fracture for people with osteoarthritis than without it. So it's something that needs to be considered as well. And Pilates works on balance. It's one of the wonderful factors, and we can go into some of these balance concepts. But one of the interesting things is that Pilates works your nervous system as well, and the nervous system is in large part what controls your balance.
That's amazing, because I know that as I aged and got older, I do a lot of sailing. And so I wasn't as flexible in moving around the sailboat as much as the younger guys that I sail with. And so taking up Pilates, because you have to have balance when you're on a sailboat and you have to be flexible because of the shifting of the water. And so that was one method that I used, and it helped tremendously. We also know, in addition to strengthening our bones and the importance of maintaining flexibility, it's also important that we get cardiovascular exercise, that our heart, our lungs get exercise. How does Pilates work in regards to that?
Well, traditional Pilates is not aerobic exercise. However, that's not to say that you can't elevate your heart rate. But I believe that Pilates is part of a larger scheme of overall conditioning. So one component would be the cardiovascular side. And you should also know that newer research is showing that obtaining cardiovascular exercise does not just mean going out for a jog. It doesn't just mean that long extended period of that mid-intensity exercise. There's a lot of work and exploration going on now with high-intensity interval training so that you do quick bursts and get just the same kind of benefit. So cardio doesn't have the same meaning as it used to years ago.
So when you talk about Pilates, the different exercises, let's say that somebody does have some of these issues. They fell, they broke, they have problems with a rotator cuff, osteoporosis. Should one get a physical first and get the okay from a doctor to begin things like this? Or is this something that, let's say, a certified Pilates instructor is made aware of, that knows how to, let's say, start an exercise program for the individual?
If you're talking about somebody that has experienced a fracture, absolutely, there should be medical clearance, especially because usually bone takes at least 4 to 6 weeks to heal. So you want to make sure that your doctor has cleared you for exercise after something like this. And then once you've had the okay and the green light to go ahead, you want to make sure that you are working with somebody who's trained in understanding the details and the movement protocols for working with somebody with osteoporosis. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier, that Pilates specifically does have a large number of exercises, or I should say movements within the exercises that involve that forward bending, that bending of your back. So I want to clarify again, it's not that you can't ever bend forward and pick something off the ground. That would mean like you have to live like a robot, which is not practical. But it's where you bend from. So it's about not rounding your back. And there are a number of Pilates exercises which do that, which can be worked around. But if you're working with an instructor, you need to make sure that that instructor is aware of these protocols, because the last thing you want to do is create more problems.
Rebecca, how would you contrast, let's say, Pilates to, you know, we have fitness centers almost in every single city where you can go to a gym. They have cardio equipment from ellipticals, bicycles, to treadmills, to stair climbers, to weight machines. Now, how would you contrast the typical gym that the individual goes to compared to, let's say, a Pilates studio?
Well, each studio is different. But the basis of Pilates is that it's a movement system. It's not just a couple different exercises. It's how these all fit together and how the exercises work in a whole body experience. So unlike perhaps doing certain weight training exercises, you're not focused on just one area of the body. And I want to be very clear that I do weight training myself, not teaching it, but for my own body. And I'm very much an advocate. So I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just giving you a comparison. So in a weight training setting, you're not traditionally looking at the full body and considering the breathing pattern of your movements. It's not necessarily a mind-body experience, whereas Pilates, by definition, is a mind-body experience. Your whole focus and concentration is on the fluidity and on the precision of the movement.
So you're talking about these movements, and I wonder if you can get into anatomy for just a minute, because I know that we have different kinds of muscles. We have slow muscles, fast muscles, and how Pilates works them differently than, let's say, if I was just sitting there lifting dumbbells and doing arm curls.
Absolutely. I'm going to rephrase what you said. It's actually slow twitch and fast twitch muscles, but I'm impressed, Jim. Most people don't know that. So you have these different muscle fiber types, and the slow twitch ones are responsible, let's call it, for endurance. So more for postural effects, let's say. Muscles that have to be lasting and enduring for a long time, helping you stay upright. And then you have your fast twitch fiber type, or fast twitch muscles, if you will, which will be helping you for bigger, explosive, rapid power movements. So like your gluteus maximus, what people think of as the big butt muscle, it's impossible for you to quickly run across the street without the use of that muscle. That's what generates the power and the force. But it's predominantly, no muscle has only one type of fiber, but that muscle, for instance, has a larger concentration of these fast twitch muscles because it's for speed, as opposed to some of the muscles in the deep spinal stabilizer, or I should say some of the deep spinal stabilizing muscles that have to be on constantly. So it's like a slow burn, if you will, in that kind of analogy. And Pilates, I want to actually clarify what I think is a big misconception. For a long time, over the past decade, there was a discussion of how Pilates worked the smaller muscles in the body as opposed to the bigger muscles. It's true that Pilates does have a focus on those, but remember, Pilates is full body movement. So there's no way that you can work your entire body and not be working the bigger muscle groups.
When one is beginning Pilates, I know there's mat work where you lay on the floor on a mat and you do certain exercises. There's also a variation of those same exercises that is done with machines where you have, for example, the basic machine everybody's probably familiar with, the reformer, you have a Cadillac, you have the chair, you have all these different machines. Contrast the difference, Rebecca, if you would, between mat work and doing machines, and which one is appropriate, or can somebody just simply stick with mat work, or others would prefer, let's say, going with a reformer?
Part of it has to do with individual preference. You can be working on a reformer in a group class setting. There are duos, for instance. So sometimes people enjoy the community of a class, and that's totally valid. And you're going to find that's a better price point when you're doing a mat class than with equipment. For, I think, obvious reasons that, you know, you can fit more people in a room, and you have, from a studio's perspective, it's far less costly to run. So you will always benefit from the mat work. And there's also, I think, often a misconception that you get more of a challenge where it's harder to work out with equipment. But actually, Joseph Pilates didn't create it as such. The mat work is in many ways harder than just using the equipment, because with the mat work, you're working purely against gravity. With the equipment, you have the resistance of the spring. So you have gravity that you might be working against, but you also have forces that are coming from different directions, say from horizontal directions, because of the spring tension and the load that's generated from that. Now, the benefit of the equipment is that it can challenge you in different planes because of these springs. And especially when you're coming from, you're rehabilitating from an injury or recovering, let's say, from an injury, because really the rehabilitation realm often can slide into physical therapy realm. And there's a crossover often with that, that because of that, you have many more options. So for instance, you know, I've worked with people who've had their leg in a cast. Well, they're going to be really challenged in a number of the traditional Pilates mat exercises, because what are they going to do with that leg? Whereas there are many things that can be done still and more adaptable by using the equipment. So I think one of the best things about Pilates is that it enables you so many different options. And especially if you're dealing with a special condition or you're recovering from some kind of injury, because there's so many ways that you can be working the body, and which I think is really, really empowering to the patient or to the person, so that they still feel like they're able to do something, even though there's one part of their body that might be compromised. And again, making sure that there is permission from the doctor and that the doctor understands that we're not talking about what they might think of as traditional exercise of going running when the person, you know, maybe had a fracture or a stress fracture in their foot, that these are other ways that the body can move and can still remain conditioned in the process.
You know, most people have heard of Pilates. We hear of yoga. What gave birth to the Pilates movement and made it so popular as you see it today? We see Pilates studios all over the place. I mean, when I was growing up, I never heard about it. I never heard about it in the 80s. It was really the late 90s that I first heard about Pilates. What made it so popular and what brought it to the public fore as it is today? Because, I mean, in California, it's very big.
Of course. Well, I'm a former ballet dancer, and so I'd known of it in, say, the early 90s during that time, but it was still a bit esoteric, and especially I didn't live in New York City at that point. And so it was, as you're saying, it wasn't something that was widely known all over. But I think we have to give a lot of credit to Mari Windsor, who was one of the people who really popularized Pilates by getting it out there everywhere. I mean, it became super well known because of the relationship with celebrities. And I think that's what started spurring the interest. And also a friend and colleague of mine, Jennifer Kreese, created a series of DVDs back in the 90s that a lot of people today, when I'm presenting, will say, oh, you know, I had her DVDs since such number of years ago. So I think it, because of the multimedia aspect, to be honest, because the 90s was when you really were, I guess it wasn't DVDs, it was really video cassettes, right? So when you think about use of cassette tape and the interest in exercise that was really growing at that point as well, helped culminate and create the momentum for all of this.
So when you look at Pilates today, you have mat work, you have the reformer machines, you have studios, you can go online, they've got DVDs, they have exercise books. What would you recommend, and especially if somebody is injured, would you recommend, number one, they talk with their doctor first to make sure they're cleared to do this kind of exercise? And then also, Rebecca, what should an individual look for if you're looking for a trainer, a studio, a class? What are the things that are most important?
Well, depending on whatever your injury is or your condition, again, making sure that your physician's okay with it and giving you any kind of guidelines. And perfect example is, let's say somebody's had a total hip replacement, really common, right? Well, there's different incision approaches or surgical approaches nowadays. So it's, you're actually seeing a lot more approach of the incision coming from the front of the hip as opposed to the back of the hip or the side of the hip. And the front of the hip has a very, very different post-operative protocol than the other. So you might not have the same restriction, whereas if you have the surgery from the other locations, there are certain movements that need to be avoided, at least for a certain amount of time. And it's very much individual based on the recommendations of your surgeon. So you need to be able to have that kind of conversation with your doctor and then also find an instructor who is aware of these different issues. So for instance, you know, somebody who's had some kind of training in working with hip replacements, you know, same thing when we're dealing with total knee replacements, partial knee replacements. You've mentioned rotator cuff issues. You know, there's so many people with bursitis, epicondylitis. Like, we could go on and on. Stenosis, very common in the post-50 population. So making sure that your instructor is aware of some of the what we call contraindications, or in other words, movements that should be avoided and modifications for them, so that you can maximize your exercise and minimize any risk of injury. So again, it's about dialogue, keeping the communication open with your physician, with, if you're working with a physical therapist, having your Pilates instructor, if it's private situation, one-on-one, let them have a direct line of communication to the physician or to the physical and or the physical therapist so that it really becomes a collaborative team effort and that you as the person or the patient are also in charge of your own health. If you're going to a class setting, there probably won't be that much of an opportunity for your instructor to have that kind of dialogue with your other healthcare professionals. However, it's still important for you to find somebody who is aware of the conditions that you've incurred and how to address those so that even if you're in a class setting, you know, oh, I actually should avoid crossing my leg over the midline for these certain stretches, for instance, if that's one of the contraindications for your injury.
And is there a specific certification? I know you're a certified Pilates instructor. Who issues those certifications and what are the certifications, let's say, a prospective client should look for?
Well, there's been an interesting situation in the Pilates as well as in the yoga realm. We are not licensed by the state as, say, a physical therapist is, or a massage therapist is. So there's a big discussion about that. It's been going on for a number of years. We do have an industry body known as the Pilates Method Alliance, and there's a national certification, or actually international certification exam that people can sit for. So that's something that I've done, and we have conferences every year. I've presented several times at those conferences, and that is probably the closest to an overall governing body. That's not to say that somebody who hasn't sat for that exam is not going to be a good Pilates instructor, but it's the closest that our industry has come to some sort of unifying body and setting some sort of overall standard.
So as we were summing up, if somebody is thinking of getting into Pilates, would you recommend, number one, rather than trying to do it yourself, there's a couple options here. You can go to a studio where there's either mat work or they have equipment such as reformers or Cadillacs or chairs. Where would you begin and what would be the steps that you would take?
Personally, I believe that nothing can ever replace the expertise of a professional right there next to you to give you guidance. I've been a mover for my entire life and I've been doing Pilates since the very late 90s. And still, I need somebody else's eyes on me because your nervous system can deceive you. You might think that, you know, your shoulder is relaxed or that your hip is not lifted when in reality it is. So we all need somebody to guide us. So if possible, I always recommend to try and take a live class or study with somebody. That said, it's not always feasible. And even if it is feasible, there is an ownership that everybody should take of their own personal practice. And we're so fortunate now to live in a day and age of the internet. So, for instance, I'm involved with a website that's called Pilates Anytime. And there's several different Pilates websites now where you pay a small monthly subscription and you get an unlimited number of classes. So, for instance, you know, when I go there, sometimes I'll teach classes that are safe for osteoporosis or sometimes ones that are focusing on some other issue. And there's so many different wonderful instructors on some of these various sites so that you can do your own practice on your own at the convenience of your home whenever you want, but you can also focus and tailor them to issues or concerns that you might have. So I think the combination of live experience as well as guided self-practice is really the best thing that you can do.
And Rebecca, if somebody wanted to find out more information about Pilates, its benefits, the things that it can do, whether it's rehab or just toning, conditioning, and maintaining flexibility, where can one go to find the information about that?
Well, there's a whole host of resources. A couple different things that come to mind. One is the site of the Pilates Method Alliance. Another is there's something through about.com. There's a Pilates focus section that has a really great wealth of information. Pilates Anytime, it's a video site where not only can you do classes, but it gives you tips on how to perform certain basic exercises. And also a really interesting montage of some of the history and footage documenting the originators, some of who are no longer around, but a couple of whom still are along, and their legacy of where we got to Pilates today through that.
One final question, if I may. I know there's a number of manufacturers out there when it comes to Pilates equipment and reformers. In your experience, do you have anyone that you have found to be better than the other, or are they all pretty much the same?
They're actually very different, and I really don't endorse one over the other, but there are some benefits to all of them. Some of the original measurements, I guess you could say, and specs, and what is often considered as the classical is developed by Grot. And the size of the reformers is much smaller. So one of the benefits is for small people. One of the challenges is for larger people. Some of the original traditional work works really, really well on that. The downside is when you're coming from a rehabilitative perspective that you don't have as many modifiable options. Balanced Body is another manufacturer, one of the largest. I'm not sure if it might even be the largest. And many of their springs tend to be lighter. So from a rehabilitative perspective, that often works very, very well. The dimensions also, though, are larger. So some of the exercises feel different on those machines. There's also Peak Pilates, which is another manufacturer. There's also Stott, another manufacturer. Some of my colleagues have started creating their own equipment as well and developing their own springs, sometimes their own frames. So there really are a number of different options. And I think for many people, the best is to just go on to the different pieces and see what best fits your body and what you are most drawn to.
Rebecca, I want to thank you for coming on the show with me this week, and especially as it is Fall Awareness Week, and it is an issue that comes up as we age, whether it's flexibility, osteoporosis, the different health issues that we all face as we get older. And one of the best things about taking the effort and trying to, whether it's changing your diet or exercise, we live longer and healthier lives. Rebecca, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about your work, Pilates in general, could you give out your website if you would?
My company is called Buff Bones, and the website is www.buff-bones.com.
Well, once again, thanks so much for coming on the program, and hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Well, that concludes my interview with Rebecca Rothshaim. Once again, visit her website and highly recommend, if you haven't thought of taking up Pilates. I know I've always done weightlifting and cardio, kind of grew up that way. There's gyms all over the place, from LA Fitness to 24-Hour Fitness, and I'm sure in your town there's probably a lot of gyms, but you might want to consider something that adds, as she talked about, the different fast and slow twitch muscles. It's also varying the things that we do that keeps us more flexible. I used it to maintain flexibility, especially being out on the ocean on a sailboat, and I found it was very effective. And hopefully, you may find that as well. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.